Welcome to the podcast where we combine Clifton strengths, God's word, and mindset coaching to discover how to use our talents for God's kingdom. Are you living in the virtue of your strengths? Learn how you can better name, claim, and tame your Clifton strengths so they can be aimed towards God's glory. Hey folks, welcome back to the Living in the Virtue of Your Strengths podcast. My name is Matt Ingold with Metanoia Catholic. I'm a certified Gallup Clifton Strengths coach. And there's a lot of podcasts that are out there that explore naming, claiming, and aiming your strengths. We want to look at taming your strengths on this. What does that mean? It means, how do we hold our God-given strengths, our gifts, and how do we live them out virtuously? So that's really the conversation, the unique conversation that we have here at the Living in the Virtue of Your Strengths podcast. So today we are focusing on strategic thinking domains. So we're a couple episodes in, excited about that. It's our main focus. We're going to be getting into what does it mean to lead with that strategic thinking domain, exploring a couple of the themes that fall underneath that. And then we're going to look at, okay, virtuously, what does it mean to show up virtuously in these themes? How might people show up viciously? And then what are some of the mindsets that can influence whether or not we're showing up virtuously or viciously? That's where, you know, Metanoia Catholic, we're mindset coaching, Catholic mindset coaching company. So we believe that virtuous actions start with virtuous thoughts. And the same thing, vicious actions, kind of those bad habits that we don't really want to get into. Even Gallup might call them overuse patterns. Those start with thoughts as well. All right. So how do we take those thoughts captive, identify them so that we can choose those thoughts that are incline us to live in our gifts in a state of contribution in a way that actually builds up the kingdom and makes us saints, right? 10x's our potential. So exciting stuff there. Always laying the foundation for our conversation of virtue on a Catholic anthropology and John Paul II's personalism. I've got it up on the screen right now for those people that are watching, but for the people that are listening again, created in the image and likeness of God, we are body, soul, composite, and we are created male and female. Those three, call it pillars of that Catholic anthropology. Kind of going to be leaning a little bit more heavily on the body, soul, composite here, because we're going to be talking about thinking, the thought life, right? And how some of that thought life, some of that mind that we have is in a spiritual place, and some of it is actually enfleshed in us. So we've got a body-soul composite even to our mind here as well. We don't want to separate them, right? We'll always end in error if we end up separating body and soul. Technical term is death for that. Nobody wants that. All right, John Paul II's personalism. First off, that absolute dignity of persons. We are separate from the animals. We have a great dignity. Natural foundation for that is that we have an intellect and a will that endows us with freedom. We can choose our own acts, leads to that self-determination piece that we are. Every person has a unique personal end and a freedom to choose that end. We always have to keep that in mind. John Paul II calls it the personalistic norm. Whenever we're approaching somebody as the object of our actions, we always have to consider that that person has, or at least should have, their own personal ends in mind. They got their own goals. They got their own desires. And if we dismiss that, if we just project our own goals and our own desires on the person, we're not going to respond in love. We will objectify. We will use the other person, which is the opposite of love, not hate, but using the other person as a means to an end is the opposite of love. This self-determination, also self-possession. We are capable of self-possession. We have this interior life and the ability to be aware of our own thinking and to be aware that we are aware of our own thinking. Again, this ties back into this absolute freedom that we have to govern and choose our own acts, okay? But also recognize, falling back on that Catholic anthropology, but we can't just separate the objective reality of who we are, right, from our own subjective experiences to go together. Ultimately, when we can live in this reality and we can have that self-possession, it equips us to do something amazing, make a gift of ourselves. Gaudium et spes, man cannot know himself except through the sincere gift of self. We come to discover who we are, live in the virtue of our strengths, not when there are something that is just driving us to independence or dependence or codependence, but rather this beautiful interdependence where we are showing up recognizing the poverty, the lack that somebody else has, recognizing that God has given us a corresponding gift to present to them. They're open, they're willing to receive it, and we make a gift of it. Beautiful thing. And there's a communion. There's an espousement that happens, if that's a word, espousal. There's a spousal nature analogy to this, and there's a fruitfulness that comes forth from free, total, faithful, fruitful. Love that theology of the body. And then finally, I said it already, say it again. The only proper response to the person is love, 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 willing the good of the other. And in order to be able to will the good of the other, we have to become students of the good of the other. We have to become students of the perceived good of the other. What is it that the Lord is putting on their heart that is unique to them? Unique, their path back to him, their journey back to the Father. How's he calling them? How is he awakening in them? And therefore, how can we make space for them to respond freely, totally, and faithfully to the love of the Father? That's willing the good of the other, willing that response, that common good of responding fully to the Father with them. All right. Love this stuff. Love it. Okay. Doggone it. I keep messing up. I'm going to have to send this out. This is not the relationship domain themes. These are the strategic thinking. Okay. I just got to highlight this stuff in my template, but ignore that. This is one of my areas of weakness is proofreading. Okay. So, but we're just going to move forward here. Okay. So the strategic thinking domains, we have eight of them, or the themes, excuse me. We have eight of them: analytical, context, futuristic, ideation, input, intellection, learner, strategic. Michelle Dunn, you've been doing this for years. I want to call on you to kind of just, can you give me a rundown? Give us all a rundown of these themes, what you've learned over the years. You've been doing strengths coaching for over a decade, been doing it with your teams, a couple different certifications that you've got. You're the brain in the room that has the great knowledge. Now that I've really built you up and put you on the, on the spot, okay?
Don't put me on
please
the spot.
Share a little bit. Yeah.
I'm not sure what you're looking for. I mean, I can speak to you about my strengths, and those are input and intellection in my top five. I have four strategic thinking skills or strengths in my top 10. I have four relationship and two executing. So my strategic thinking skills are going to look very different than somebody who has other strengths in their top 10, along with those four strategic thinking. I can't even say that. And it's like,
I guess what I'm looking for is really a generic kind of isolating each one of the strengths, not necessarily. And I know you have such a great appreciation for the nuances of these. And yes, always need to consider how these things show up through that, the influence of the adjacent themes, right? Fearfully and wonderfully made. It was in our responsorial psalm this morning. Beautiful. But also there is consistency enough, perhaps. Can you kind of give us a little bit of that? So I'm asking you to kind of temper your output of your input on some
so
of these.
So as a domain overall, strategic thinkers like to think, create, and learn. Mm. And how they do that is going to be different for each one of the themes. They're going to each take a different kind of trajectory, I guess, of thought. Some are going to go deeper than others. Some are more active than others. Strategic is one of those really active strategic thinking themes. Intellection, input, learner are the little trifecta there. And they're going to just like collect information. And how each one of them does it is going to be a little bit different. Some are going to go deeper than others. Ideation and futuristic sometimes make a little strengths baby. They have a tendency to be very, very visionary. And then context likes to go into the past. So context and futuristic are so interesting because they are both strategic thinking themes, but their desire and goal and reward are going to feel very, very different. And then analytical, of course, likes to take everything apart and ask a lot of questions to get lots and lots of data. So the data that analytical collects is going to be very different than what intellection collects or even input. So that's kind of a rundown of each one, real quick and dirty.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, no, I love it, Michelle. And if the analytical is one I always look at, they're collecting data, right? They're really, and I love how you said also that they're going to have a different motivation. They're going to have that different kind of driver, which I find is really the main distinction between the the signature themes is really what's motivating, what's driving them. Because like you said, learner and input can really look very similar in terms of the behavior that are associated with them. But really, where are they distinct, right? Learner, we know, is something that's a little bit more method, right? And so when I'm thinking my learner, I'm number one learner, where my learner is showing up, I would say is I'm constantly, when I'm thinking about something, I'm thinking of it in the context of teaching it a lot of the time. The best way to transfer the information is how my learner kind of manifests. Now, again, that may not necessarily be how everybody's learner manifests, but learner has to do more with pedagogy. It's the number one theme that you'll find amongst academic administrators, people that are in administration, and they're overseeing, like, say, the academic plan or something for a school or something like that. Context, yes, going into the past, we like to say keeper of the great books, futuristic, visionary, head in the clouds. Ideation, able to make connections between seemingly disparate things, really a circular thinking theme. My wife has this high, I don't have this high. And so oftentimes she has ideas and I'm just like, you are 12 steps ahead of me. Please help my linear thinking brain arrive where you're at, because I cannot see the brilliance of it yet. Inputs, just think of a library. You're a living library. You might be collecting physical resources. You might be being a pack rat. You might be collecting just resources in a specific vein of things, or just everything has a use. Even if it's not apparent right now, everything could have a use. Intellection, really driven in that understanding, fails to necessarily often be decisive in defining what something is, because there's always a different perspective that you could take from something. And so it's a beautiful theme that helps people to really know the beautiful facets. I think of Adam in the garden, naming all of the animals. What a high intellection skill, as he's coming to know each one of these species, and in knowing each one of those species, coming to know himself all the more and arrive at that place, understanding his dignity. He was alone. There was something that separated him from the animals. Learner, already kind of talked through that. Strategic, ways forward. You're finding ways forward, multiple options. That's kind of that in a nutshell. Anybody else want to add on, pepper in on top of some of these, maybe a favorite theme that they've got here and how it shows up in their life? Bueller. I know, I put everybody on the spot and everybody's like, oh man, I'm going to call on somebody. I'm going to call on, let's see, Harriet. I know you're there. I know you're high strategic, correct, Harriet?
Well, actually, no, I have three strategic. Meyer. So I have number two is learner, eight is input, nine is intellection, and all the rest are pretty much relationship except for a ranger. So when I did the test, then I was surprised, because I, during my lifetime, was told I wasn't analytical, which was right, because that's 28. But I never thought of myself as having strategic thinking, because I'm not the math person. I'm not the logic person. And so I just took that thinking I wasn't intellectual just from my life. But then when you go through this and you look at this and you say, wow, yes, I love to learn. I love methods. So when I came into the faith and I became Catholic, what's the first thing I do is I go to Bible study. First thing, I'm going to learn. I'm going to
input,
put this together. Yep. So it is more than what we've been taught in our life. And you can see how these things go together. And you can, it is better. I mean, it's just wonderful to see that, because I did have things that were easy for me to learn in school, languages, English, history, but I just got told the other thing for my lifetime. So I don't have logic, but yet We do a lot of game playing in our family, and I can frustrate my son by telling him, I do not have a plan. I'm working through this game and I'm learning it and I'm bringing it in and I'm inputting it, but I do not have an analytical, strategic, deliberative, focused, disciplined plan. So that's where I am.
I was listening to Simon Hurry on his Talent to Titan podcast recently. I think it was on the Executor domain, and he was talking about how strategic thinkers will think ahead of time for before they begin, and the executors, those people that are high in those purple execution themes that we discover, we explored at the last podcast, will think through doing retroactively. They will act first, and then they will reflect on their experience, right? We can see how there can be value in both. Okay, for people who, thank you, Harriet. For people who lead with strategic thinking, I want to get into some motivations. Because again, the different domains, the four different domains, seem to have a distinction in where they desire to rest ultimately. And we've got a lot of people on the call here that have some high strategic. We have some people that aren't necessarily high strategic, but let's start the discussion here. What is, you know, Michelle, in the beginning, you had said create, what, understand, and what was the other kind of, you know, growing knowledge? What were the other things that you'd mentioned?
Say to again. Create, think, and learn. Create, think, and learn. So okay. You're going to create different things, you know, depending on which strategic thinking theme you have.
Okay. Create, think, and learn. Okay. What are some other thoughts here in terms of, now, Melissa, I know you recently took your test. Can you chime in here and like consider, you know, what you know, you said you're high in context, right? When you're living in that context, can you kind of describe a little bit where, what's driving you, what's motivating you when you're living in that strength?
Well, what I'm trying to do, the context strength. Well, I think a driver for most, even any of the strengths for me, is to gather as much information I can very quickly and like, you know, try to get informed what is going on in the present moment, what led us here. And then I'm kind of like, all right, we got to get to the root. I'm not a band-aider. I don't like to band-aid things. I like drive the root of something and dig it out. And so we don't end up here again. And that can, maybe that's kind of not a lot of other people's approach. So I have to convince others to, okay, this is why I'm digging to the root, because this Band-Aid, sometimes Band-Aids are good. You got to stop the bleed, but we're going to just end up with the same wound or bleed again. And we're not going to, and we're going to have to do this process all over again. So
we're going to have to do this process all over again. Does that sound like context, folks? And
I can't stand having to repeat the same process again if we don't have to, you know? And trying to, I've learned you can't always convince others of that. In a lot of areas, you know, in the household, you know, I'm like, I will have to fight tooth and nail with my kids and my husband sometimes to see, no, we're doing this way. And they're like, why? And I'm like, just let it go this way. And then they're like, oh, now we understood, Mom. Now we get it now. But people can't always see that, you know, and it's hard to be in that position too, to see that root or see that something. Sometimes it's a gift and it's a curse, because you have to tooth and nail for others to see something they cannot see. And I don't mean that in a prideful way. I mean that like when you're praying to the Holy Spirit or you got that, you know, divine connection, sometimes God infuses you with that insight and that keen insight. And then the harder part is not trying to even solve something or to problem solve through it. It's to get others to jump on the board too, you know, with, so that's that's context for me.
Something that you said, Melissa, that I think is pretty key here is see something that they cannot see, right? And I wonder if that's something that is common to a lot of the strategic thinking themes. All right, see something that they cannot see. Now, when we're saying see something, we're not talking about literally something that we're seeing with our eyes. We're seeing something that's in our mind's eye. We're seeing, like, we have an idea or a picture, an image in our imagination that we can see it. It's there, but other people are not able to see it. I remember the movie Searching for Bobby Fischer, came out in the 90s. I don't know if anybody ever saw that movie. It was about, you know, Bobby Fischer, the great chess player. It's a great, good, feel-good movie, all right? And it was about this young boy who just loved playing chess, and he gets fixed up with this mentor who's always telling him to kind of clear the chessboard, right? Don't focus on the pieces. See it in your mind first. Don't focus on the pieces. Don't focus on the pieces. Don't focus on the pieces. See, strategic thinking themes have this ability to see what is not yet visible to the eye, right? Don't move until you see it. Don't move until you see it. That's what the coach was always telling this young prodigy, this chess play prodigy. Don't move until you see it. And again, where we juxtapose this with executor, it's just like move and then figure out the vision as you go along. Where thinking, I'm wondering if it's a little bit more, don't move until you see it. Don't move until you see it. Michelle, I see kind of some nodding over there. I know you're very dominant in these areas. What are your thoughts?
I just love how you're relating it to movies and things and other characters.
My connectedness.
Don't move until you see it. That is intellect and input. That's me for sure. But also, you know, again, just those other strengths that are around it. So I'm also considering with my relationship building and how's it going to affect the other people. Right. Mm. So, and I see Jane is nodding her head as well because we share intellection. So intellection's going to be a little slower moving. I talk about pace all the time. Intellection's going to be a little more slower moving than strategic, and strategic can be very quick.
Yeah, even how we coach, I find the people that are high in intellection or high in those strategic thinking skills also are like of that melancholic temperament, right? That have a very rich interior life. And a lot of times where we're coaching them is where this interior life is leading to a place of stuck stagnation. They don't make a decision ultimately because they're trying to gather a lot of that information. And it's just kind of helping them to move forward while at the same time, not just be dismissive of these beautiful gifts that they have, but to kind of bring them to a place of fruitfulness rather than a place of just staying stuck, staying stagnant, right? And finding that good tempered. That's part of taming some of these strengths is tempering them so that they don't ultimately lead us to a place where we're just, you know, we're being indecisive, right? As an example here. Jane, you want to jump in here, talk motivations with your strategic thinking?
Of course. So one of the interesting things, and Michelle has mentioned this a number of times, is the placement, which is what I love about the strengths, is that, you know, like you said, so achiever is my number five, which is an executor. And so I have four strategic thinking and three executor main strengths in my top 10. So one of the things that I discovered that about strategic thinking is that many times people don't understand. One of the things that one of my mentors has said is the problem with strategic thinkers is nobody knows what's going on inside your head. They see you for a walk. They see you cleaning the dishes. They see you doing 101 other things, but they do not know what's going on in your head. And that's one of those aha moments for me, because I'm sanguine and choleric, so I don't fit your melancholic strategic thinking thing. But for learner, I totally resonated with you in that part of my frustration is I'm always asking how. how do I do this so that I can go do it again?
When you say frustration, Jane, why is, can you tell me why frustration?
Yes, I was on, I was doing some training on websites and technology and blah, 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 blah. And they're going like, oh, and you can do it this way and this way. I'm like, okay, that sounds really great. The idea, I understand the idea of why we want to do that. Show me physically how, what are you clicking? Because I'm not seeing it. You've missed a couple of steps and you've jumped and I don't know how. And that's as a teacher, as a homeschool mom of 15 or 18 years, that was always the thing I wanted to show my children was I want you to be able to master, then you carry over. I want you to know how the steps, because once you how, then you can do it again.
So Common Core destroyed you when it came out. I get destroyed. Everybody, what's the method here? You just, we had a perfectly good method. You got a brand new method. I can't teach the old method. You're judging me on the old method rather than the result.
But one of the things real quickly, jumping to, I'm so sorry, I forgot her name and I can't see her. She talked about, Harriet, about faith. That's one of those things that I knew as I was coming back to the church, I needed to put on the mind of Christ. So my input and my intellection really led me. And but my context, you said my context is what, number 16? I always wanted to know the why. Again, the learner. Like, why does the church teach X, Y, and Z? And then I would delve into the documents and the saints. And I'm like, oh, that makes so much sense. Of course we have to go to confession, blah, 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 or whatever. So it's been able to really lead me in my core, and belief is number 9. So it's very strong. So it's all, awesome. It's all, again, it's all helping, right? It's like,
yeah. It's all part of the journey of naming, claiming, and naming. Okay, so I'm going to do something that is probably going to drive all the intellection people crazy. And it's going to, I'm going to try to put these strategic thinking themes in a box, right? Under an umbrella. All right. So feel free to throw all kinds of ninja stars on this. I already revealed this before because I am bad at not clicking on my PowerPoint and advancing it. So this is where I just kind of rest right now when I say, okay, if I was to make a very generic motivation goal that strategic thinking domains we're seeking to rest in. Again, when I say rest in it, it's like once we're here, we don't want to move anymore. We're good. We've arrived at our goal. The thought is that strategic thinking seeks to rest in conceptualization. Conceptualization. I think of the powers of the soul that St. Thomas Aquinas shares, and we teach this in depth in our Catholic Coaching Foundation's program that we have for Catholic coaches or for coaches that are out there that want to really ground their coaching in the Catholic faith. We draw from St. Thomas Aquinas' philosophy of psychology. He talks about the power, the faculty of our imagination, and how that is the place where we conceptualize, we see with that mind's eye something that's not yet visible. And we stand on the shoulders of John Paul II. The body makes visible the invisible reality of our interior life. We may have a goal in our mind and something we always approach in coaching. Until you can conceive it in your head, you're not going to be able to hold it in your hand. You're not going to be able to put it on paper. There needs to be first a clear blueprint, a concept which takes understanding the past, which takes taking input from a number of different sources and ideation and twirling that thing around and understanding all the different facets of it, which takes, you know, moving into the future and not necessarily building that thing solely with the things that you have right now, but the things that you may have in the future. it takes kind of developing a bit of a plan on how you are going to get there, bringing those strategic themes forward here as well. I see conceptualization. I see taking something first that is invisible, but it's only visible to your mind's eye, not so that it rests there, but ultimately so it can be handed off to the executors to be made visible, so that it's something that it's a good that we can see in our mind, but once we put flesh on it, once we make it incarnate, once there's an incarnational experience of something, a concept that we have conceptualized, not in isolation, but with God as well. He's part of the part of manufacturing that blueprint. Now, when it's passed off to the executors that want to get it done, they want to rest in something being complete, being made visible, being made concrete. Now everybody can participate in that good that once only I was able to participate when it was purely in conceptual form. Now it's been made visible by the executors so that people can participate in it and share and delight in it and have a full sensory experience, a full human experience of that invisible good that's been made visible. Did I go too deep too fast? Did I use too big words? I see people writing notes. That's usually a good thing, unless they're saying writing things like, I don't understand this at all. You lost me. But again, this is going back to like the Catholic anthropology, the body-soul composite. We're not meant to just live in spiritual land. And strategic thinking, I think where it can sometimes even go, this is a judgment here, so take it or leave it, where it can start to go into overuse and excess is when it just wants to live in spiritual land. But ultimately, that's something that's, there's almost, it's not fully in keeping with our human nature, with our bodiliness. The body, and it alone, is capable of making visible the invisible reality of the spirit and divine, of the person, spirit and divine. Think about it. Can we share? We can share some concepts, but there's something that's lacking. There's something that's just not brought to fulfillment if it's just a left conceptual, but it's not ultimately brought to completion. Now, I'm speaking this as somebody that has four executor in my top 10 also. And so I recognize that I have a bias for the enfleshment, but I lead with strategic thinking. Throw some stones. Amen. Michelle, please. Yeah, do it. Do it.
I got a few things to say here.
Do it.
First of all, we can create word pictures, right? So we can create with language. So I do think that I'm not saying that there's executing embedded in that, but kind of. And very frequently.
But think of even how language is sensory. You can hear it, you can read it. There is something being made visible at that point.
Yes, absolutely.
So, keep going. I'll stop interrupting.
I agree with you. I mean, that's what I'm trying to say to you. Yes, the word pictures we are creating, and just like we say, ideation and futuristic are visionaries, right? So, and like you're saying, we don't want to get stuck in ideas or concepts, but also without ideas and concepts, executing is incomplete also. So there's that complementarity that comes in. That's just incredibly beautiful.
Oh, I love it. Sing it, connectedness.
Put it all together. Yeah. So I just, and those of us who love to think deeply feel as though we are doing something. And I don't, and so sometimes we can, if we're stuck in thinking and we're not actually creating or passing it off to be created, that can become vicious. But also, if we're low in executing, we can use those strategic thinking skills to do, to get things done.
Tell me more.
It's not a far leap from conceptualization to actualization, especially if you've got a particular combination of, particular combination of things, like strategic can really get things done with some focus, with some intentionality, I think I'm saying.
Great.
Some deliberate.
While you grab your ear, I'll kind of build on something. So I'm curious about this, and I want to kind of pose this out to the group. Feel free to chat in, and I'll kind of raise your hand and come in. But I'm wondering, even for people that are high strategic, if there's kind of a universal desire to see and to tangibly, bodily experience what you're conceiving in your mind. I think of even kind of the arguments that you hear out there where it's just like, okay, violent video games or violent movies, where there is a desire to act it out. Ultimately, we want our fantasies to become a reality. That's the greatest thing, like the greatest thing for the people who fantasize is to see their fantasy become a reality. It's one of the most tragic things when they have fantasies, thoughts, right? Conceptualizations that are very vicious and untamed, but can be very beautiful also when these fantasies, these dreams that they have are something that have God's breath, right? Have that inspiration of the Holy Spirit that's moving them forward. Jane, you got a hand raised.
Sorry, I couldn't figure out how to unmute. One thing that came up for me when you talked about conceptualization is that is so ingrained in what Metanoia Catholic teaches, in that are the journal, right? Mm-hmm. We take a circumstance, we think about what the thoughts are, we examine the thoughts, we examine the emotions, and then we think new thoughts, therefore to create new actions. And so it's very beautiful. It's right, goes hand in hand with everything that, and of course, you know, the secret weapon I always say about Metanoia Catholic is that, you know, exercise 6 and 7, we take it, we repent, and we figure out where's the viciousness of it. We take it to Christ, and then the metanoia. What do you say about it? What do you conceptualize, Lord? How do you visualize? Mm-hmm. And then we can take it into action. So I personally, because strategic thinking is my dominant domain, I completely concur in this. And going back to what Michelle was saying about create, because one of my myths that I am working on re-visualizing is the limiting belief that I was not creative as a child. I wasn't very good at art. I don't sing. I didn't sew very well. I cook. I have 5 beautiful babies, so, you know, praise God.
Pretty creative.
but I have to, and a friend of mine years ago told me that when we say we're not creative, we are actually denying the image of God in ourselves, because God is the creator. So it's that little gnawing, that's that little gnawing thought of mine that I have to continually swipe away as a mosquito of like, no, stop. I am a creator. Mm-hmm. So when I realize, what do I create? That's always my challenge of like, what do I create? What have I created today? Sometimes it's just writing thoughts of my journal. Sometimes it's the prayers. Sometimes it's the fasting, this intercession, right? That's what I'm creating today, is being the gap. So
beautiful. There's so many different ways that we can make the visible invisible, but even if it's not made visible, there is without a doubt, a creative element to that, without a doubt. And so, for all you strategic thinkers out there that find yourself living more in that visionary place than the putting flesh on the bones, you are no less valuable than the person putting flesh on the bones. There's plenty of people that are building structures that have no thought, no conceptualization, no clarity behind them. And they labor all night and they catch nothing, right? Executor needs the strategic thinking. Relationship, right? Needs that conceptual, the understanding of the person, right? And the drawing, creating, making space for that person to come forward and become who they truly are, to will their good, not just spiritually, but also physically in the flesh as well. Beautiful complementarity to this. So we pivot our conversation here to kind of looking at the virtuous and vicious sides. We always look at virtuous through interdependence, right? Male and female, he created them, our anthropology, our Catholic anthropology. We're not meant to be alone. The man was not meant to be alone. There's something about relationship coming together and the fruitfulness that can come forth from it that tells us about our ultimate end. Okay, so when we're living in virtue, we're being drawn deeper into relationship with God, but also with the communion of saints. And that's the saints in heaven, but also the saints here on earth and those in the church suffering in purgatory as well. Okay, so when I look at the virtuous side leading to interdependence, I think of a mindset here of honoring the unique perspectives of others while freely sharing your own thoughts and ideas. There's a freedom to see the other person as gift, but also see yourself as gift. I think even attachment styles here. Michelle, I know you've done quite a bit of work in attachment. Can you see kind of the attachments, the forward attachment, the secure and insecure kind of showing up here? Is there? Can you lend anything in there? I put you on the spot. Is that vague enough for you?
Yeah, we always talk about attachment in terms of strengths because they're going to make your overuse or your weakness a little more visible, I think, when you're either in an insecure and avoidant attachment. You know, I'm not sure, though, exactly what the connection is that you want to make there, though, Matt.
Well, yeah. So I think of a secure attachment is where you can see, in short, I'm good and the other is good, right? There's a recognition of the mutual goodness of the two, which you can see here. I honor the unique perspectives of others while freely sharing my own. We don't share the crap of ourselves, right? We share what we see as good and worthy of being gifts, right? Mm-hmm. And we can only receive what we perceive to be good from somebody else and sincere, no strings attached.
Okay. And the flip side of that is when a child sees you as a parent being bad, right? Mm-hmm. They do think also, if you are bad, then I can also be bad. And that's where a lot of acting out can come from. Mm-hmm. Just interesting twist on
yeah, that. Yeah, yeah. And you can see how it kind of leads over to, we could probably carry that analogy over here with the attachment, even into this vicious side, right? So we got three areas that we're drawing from Gallup here on the overuse patterns and have a little bit mindset behind this. So where we can see strategic thinking showing up vicious is where it goes to independence, dependence, or codependence, right? So considering the independence, I take my own counsel and dismiss the counsel of others. I take my own counsel. Right? The scripture says it's the foolish man is the one who takes his own counsel. You think of the man who that Christ speaks of, who has all the grain. And he says, what shall I do? He consults himself. I shall build more barns. Right? What happens? You fool. Tonight, your life will be demanded of you. A person that just dismisses, doesn't see the other as good, right? Maybe it has that insecure attachment style of overly self-reliant, but being dismissive of any sort of contribution to the other. All right, where we can see this leading to dependence is the opposite. I don't think for myself, nor do I, nor trust my own reason. Folks, I can see this showing up where people just parrot back whatever the media says, right? And they say, well, these are the people, these are the doctors out there. These are the people that have the credentials. They got the white lab coats. Like, but there is a suspension of their own reason in the process, right? And as soon as you kind of challenge, they appeal to authority, right? But appealing to authority is just falling into a dependent relationship. We're not engaging our own God-given reason. Again, this is part of our anthropology. In the image and likeness of God, one of those things, the natural component is that we have this reason. We can think for ourselves. When we are not using our own reason, we are abusing our reason. We're abusing our dignity in that. And it doesn't mean that you can't take counsel from other people. But always, always, we are responsible for the thoughts that we think and the beliefs that we choose and the people in whom we put faith, right? Even as you're listening to this, I hope everybody's listening to this isn't just taking my word for it. I hope that you are actively discerning this and considering and like holding it up to the light of truth, all of this work. And then finally, leading to codependence. Others are there to indulge my ideas, thoughts, and ruminations. Okay, so what do I mean by this, right? You are there to just, I am just going to unload, right? My thoughts that I share, my ideas that I share, my intellection that I share, the input that I have that I want to turn into output. You are just there to receive it. And what I get in return in this codependent relationship is good feelings about myself. You could see how somebody could even create a space for kind of this as well. And there's kind of a codependent exchange. If somebody sees a little better content, this was one I was kind of like looking at it. I was like, this is the first thing, kind of a specific example of this. So, but I want to kind of open the floor up for everybody here as we kind of transition here. What are some ways that you may see your strategic thinking showing up in a virtuous versus a vicious quality? I know, for example, my strategic can show up in ways where I think of a way forward, and I can be my strategic and my futuristic, and I can see very clearly the concept in my head. But then I just go head down and I go and I don't communicate it to other people. And then I get angry at them for not being following along where I think we should be going. Right. So this is kind of an area where I've gone independent with my visionary, with my futuristic and strategic. And it's not really considering the input of other people. I recognize that even some of the thoughts behind that, which we'll get into here in a moment, are, you know, I want to be the one that is the reason for success. You see that vice of vainglory showing up there. I want to be the one that has the solution. I want to be the one that takes the credit. What else? What else do we have? I know it's kind of a little bit more vulnerable as we start to share interiorly. Michelle, thank you.
One of the things that you all were talking about on the Metanoia Catholic call this morning were, you know, wanting to manipulate other people with your knowledge, right? And so sometimes we have a tendency to push what we know onto other people in an attempt to form their minds or change their minds or manipulate them in some way. And so that can become pretty vicious on the codependent side. So I think the antidote to that is just learning to ask permission and create relationships. So we can kind of get siloed in our thoughts and then want and think they're right. And in our arrogance, sort of push that onto other people when we want to relieve ourselves of something uncomfortable that they're doing and change the other person so that we feel better. So we can kind of use that deep thinking or that information gathering without permission.
I love that you brought that up and how you made that connection where ultimately it could be very subtle, right? With the way of, hey, I got this resource, you know, I got my, you know, my son or my daughter that's apostasy, right? They're outside of the faith. They've left the faith. And so I'm just going to hand them this, you know, Matthew Kelly book that I got for free, or I'm going to pass them this podcast, or I'm going to send them to the Catholic Coaching Podcast with Metanoia Catholic, or whatever that may be, whatever resource that is. And it's just like the solution is just the assumption is they're just lacking in knowledge that I have. And so I'm just going to give them the knowledge. But again, where does this fall short of John Paul II's personalism? We're seeking to make the other person an object of our actions. And if we're failing to consider that they have their own personal ends in mind, their own personal conceptualization of what their greatest good is, if we fail to enter into that, we won't take it into consideration. And oftentimes, if we don't know what that is, we can't appeal to it. We can't affirm it in some cases where it's okay to affirm it, but we can't really just enter into it. That's like lay the found. I love how you said lay the foundation of a relationship, Michelle, where, yeah, we can kind of be the person that shares truth without love, right? You're a clamoring gong or a clashing cymbal. How often do you share knowledge and it turns into a battle? That clashing cymbal, when you look up the lexicon of it, it's the sound of a war cry. It's a battle cry. So sharing truth can often lead to battle, right? If it's not shared with love. Okay, jumping into some of the virtuous and vicious mindsets that are behind this here as we kind of wrap up. Okay, so again, feel free to touch on this. If this resonates, give me a thumbs up, give me a chat on this if you want to add something. But virtuous mindsets. Yeah, Michelle, I see you fire hosing people with information, right? That virtuous mindset, I think that's been very helpful for the strategic thinker is I can be a student and a teacher at different places and stages of life. There's a humility in that, I think. It's something that's helped me to recognize, give myself permission to not know, because oftentimes strategic thinking wants to rest in that conceptualization, even if it's the illusion that they have the full picture in mind, right? You can see how that pride can show up, right? And manifest itself in stubbornness and stonewalling and not taking in other people's input. No, like give ourselves permission to be students still, but also recognize where we've received and we're being called into that place of giving, right? That Petrine, that St. Peter posture, that active sowing of the seed, right? Sometimes we're called to be the open soil and receive. Sometimes we're called to be the person that sows the seed in somebody else's life, right? Yeah, Melissa, meeting people where they are and strategically asking questions rather than just giving advice. I love that. I love it. I love it. That curiosity, right? Doing the due diligence to identify what is that ultimate end that John Paul II talks about in the person. What's their personal end? So maybe that's a personal end that we can get on board with too. And we can start to will that collectively, commonly, together. Right? It's the foundation of a loving relationship. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Curiosity, I think, is the great thing for the strategic thinker. A great emotion. That vicious mindset. Okay. Where can it show up in that independence? Going rogue, going by yourself. I know better than them. I know better. I know better. Have you ever thought I know better? I've never thought I know better. I know better than them, okay? Or some sort of nuance of that, right? They don't know what I know. They don't have the experience that I have, right? Consider how these are cutting off any contribution, failing to see the potential contribution of another. Now, doesn't mean that you don't approach different types of counsel with consideration as to the merit that their contribution holds, right? Not necessarily going to consult a 20-year-old on how to be a better grandparent, right? Or somebody that's junior, the rookie on the team, as to, you know, what are the keys to really being the MVP, the successful person, right? The grandmaster. No, there's kind of a prudence that shows up here, but we can always gain something from the other, because every person has a unique gift, got a unique word that God has spoken only to them, a unique experience of the Father. Maybe they don't know it yet, but we can always create space for that, for them to discover it themselves. Think about it on the dependent side. They know better than I. I'm just not a doctor. Whatever they say, I can just shut my brain off. I think about Father Chad Ripperger, one of these great exorcists. We do a lot. We pull a lot from his work. And one of the things he talks about is in the media, how he goes, whenever somebody's presenting facts to me and they have a whole bunch of story, a whole bunch of preparation up front, right? They're shaping my conceptualization. He says, one of the first things I do is I suspend judgment. What does that mean? I am not going to just blindly accept what's being put in front of me, because it could be a steaming pile of poo that somebody is trying to paint as a plate of brownies. That's a really gross image, right? But like, we have to put things through the smell test here, folks. We cannot abandon our own God-given reason without doing damage to ourselves, violating that imago Dei, that image and likeness of God. Okay, and then finally, others should listen to what I have to say all the time. Others should listen to what I have to say. That's kind of going into that codependence place. That's a manual. That's a rule book that you have that you're putting on somebody else. And it doesn't necessarily honor the other person's freedom or their unique contribution. Michelle, you always have thoughts. I'd love to invite you on here, Michelle. Parrott, you've got some great points of wisdom here as well. If you could follow up and share a little bit here. Jane, like, open the floor here. Michelle, you go first. Harriet, you collect your thoughts. I'd love to hear from you.
I just love this, the frame of this, Matt. The virtuous versus the vicious mindset. And that's, I can't really add very much to what you've said. It's a beautiful structure. Of course, I love the structure of it. I'm not sure I can add anything right now. You've done such a great job.
Well, you gave me the structure in the first place. So it's a backhanded compliment you're making to yourself. Harriet, how are you receiving this?
This is good, because you can see yourself doing these things at different times. Like, you're on both sides. You can see where you've done, I did a good job. Well, I didn't do as such of a good job with that. And so being a caregiver, leaving space open for my husband to say the things, because he says things very slowly in it's a long story. It's a paragraph and I'm a sentence. So I can see where I need to be, you know, use my strengths to open that time and not have to, you know, get to a decision, but give him time to express it, which I haven't. Sometimes I don't do that as well as, you know, I'm sure other people have, you know, things that's been like that. That hasn't been a problem with children or taking care of children. I seem to be really good at doing it there. It's just switching it over to the spousal relationship is okay. I need, you know, he needs time to say the things, and then I just listen and not try to fix it, not try to think over that. So that's where being a student and at different stages of life for different days of the week.
Beautiful.
So that's what I see.
And I don't know if you were on our Metanoia Catholic Academy workshop this morning on that locus of control inside, outside. I mean, it's
working on that.
Yes. I mean, that's a whole part of the student piece of it. It's just understanding what's in our control and what's not. And then how do we show up in freedom?
Right.
And Jane, I see your head popping up here.
Well, intellections going a little deeper in that, and mainly because this is personal, I've been praying for four virtues, which I see vary if we're living in our virtuous mindset as strategic thinkers: docility, obedience, magnanimity, and humility. And they go so well together with that, because sometimes we are the teacher and sometimes we need to learn to be the student. And that's the question, right? Of, I may know more about something, but am I docile and humble enough to hear what you have to say about the subject? Mm. Or my gift might be to step up and be the teacher so that you can learn and my magnanimity is being shown, and obedience too, because I'm being obedient to the Lord, right? Part of that. So those are just some extra thoughts on that. But I really, really appreciate this framework. This is beautiful. And like every virtue, just like that's where you put the vicious mindset and the virtuous mindset. Every virtue has two opposite sins, right? Yeah. Outside of it. So we want to stay in the path.
Yeah, so, I'm seeing it, right. Yeah, you can go excess or deficit on those things. What I'm kind of seeing is like this image of creating space and then filling space, and almost this rhythm of life of creating space. Virtue has a way of creating space and then filling space, that posture of receptivity, the posture of gift. It's like breathing. There's a filling the space and then the exhale, creating the space, right?
Beautiful.
And even there's that small kind of, almost that time where you're completely exhaled, there's almost a small death that's in between that's taking place, but with that small pause. But yeah, just seeing living virtuously, being that, that following that rhythm. Melissa, I see you got a hand raised here.
Yes, real quickly, the ability to execute both of these mindsets too, I think really falls, I'm going back to the root of, you know, do we get enough sleep? Are we cranky? You know, if I've had enough sleep and I'm on my A game, you know, you can execute that day, but boy, and I don't drink coffee in the morning, but you know, I think our self-care too is so important physically. Did I exercise? Did I eat right? You know, have I just had some downtime mentally for myself to be able to execute all of this? Because, you know, when you're a caregiver of your husband or your children or whatever, you get depleted. And when we're all these tools and self-awareness are so wonderful, but it's hard to execute them when we haven't fueled our tank, our gas, you know, of our gasoline car, you know, the car, you kind of like putt, putt, putt. And you're like, I know all that, but I can't do it right now. I don't have it in me.
I love it. I love it, Melissa. And I think of even in terms of our own, going back to that anthropology, we're body, soul, composite. What does that mean? It means that not only do we have this rich interior life, right? This subjective kind of experience of as we're taking in reality, but there's an objective reality that we have to honor. We have to honor our own bodiliness. We have to honor the reality that if we don't sleep, we will die. We will go crazy. If we don't eat, if we don't have that self-care, if we don't honor the objective reality of our own bodiliness, we're going to arrive at a place of error. we're going to arrive at a place where we're making decisions that are not in keeping with our dignity. They are out of integrity with who we are and created in the image and likeness of God. And you're right. We're not going to be able to show up as gift at that point, because you can't give from an empty tank, right? Have to be able to kind of retreat like Christ did up to the mountaintops to kind of just commune with the Father, right? Man does not live by bread alone, but from every word that proceeds forth from the mouth of God, right? We need to be able to return to that place and receive at that. Michelle, Michelle Simpson, I want to give you kind of some space here. So I know there was just, what has it been like as somebody that doesn't necessarily have in those dominant themes, those strategic thinking, how have you been experiencing this podcast here today, Michelle? I think you have like what your number 15 is your first green strategic thinking theme that you've got.
Yeah.
We know Michelle thinks.
Because I can relate still, even to the virtues and the, you know, I tend to want to sometimes tell people what to do because I think I know better for them. And I'm seeing, you know, well, with everything, with the journaling and all of that, I'm just really learning what I can and cannot control. Where that locus of control is, mm-hmm. and what I can mm-hmm. do. So
beautiful.
I don't know. It was very, very beautiful and very helpful today.
Awesome. All right. Well, praise the Lord. Well, folks, going to wrap it up there. I think we might've gone over an hour, but thanks so much for joining us for Living in the Virtue of Your Strengths. And if you're watching on YouTube, make sure you follow, subscribe, go check out the Catholic Coaching Podcast as well, where my better half and I, we do mindset coaching, and we do it authentically Catholic, in a very authentically Catholic way, super practical way. Also in the Metanoia Catholic Academy, that's where the participants on this call are all students in the Metanoia Catholic Academy. We're choosing to be students here as well. And certainly I'm one of them as well. But if you want to learn how to really practically, take these strengths and apply them to your life and go through the process of naming, claiming, taming, and aiming those strengths and learning some of the mindset skills that are part of that journey, that's what we're doing. We actually have in between these podcast calls that are public to everybody, we've got some coaching in the strengths, right? Where we're all learning how to name, claim, tame, and aim those strengths. Why is that important? Folks, this is our God-given reality. This is how God created us to be. Our vocation is not going to leave these strengths behind. It's not going to take the talents that he's given us and bury them in the sand. That's not what we're meant to do. We're meant to take these things, trade them, make a contribution, go forth and bring them to the world as gifts. And guess what? By that very nature, by the way God designed it, there will always be a return. And the return is how God designed God dictates that return to be, but there's always a fecundity, a fruitfulness that comes in being a free, total, and faithful gift. So thanks for being with us here today to learn a little bit more about how you can be a gift. The next one that we're going to be talking about is our final domain. We're going to be talking about the influencing domain. I'm low in influencing, so I'm going to be leaning on some of you other influencers that are on this call to really share how this all works. And then we're going to be going into each one of the signature themes individually. So stay tuned for all that on the Living in the Virtues of Your Strengths podcast. God bless.